Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a destination. We are finally here.
Let's go.
Good. Welcome back to another episode of Destination Dynasty. I am your gracious host, Scott Connor. You can find me on X at Charles Chill FFB. Everything at Destination Devi at patreon.com/allgas. And of course, destinationdevi.com for access to all of the tools. And if you do join the Destination 5 tier on the website, you get access to the Discord along with all of the tools and the bonus content that we do inside the Discord every single week. So check that out. And I want to give a shout out this week to my co-host on Trades in Five, Shane Manila, dropped his second episode of Shane Says on YouTube. It has been an absolute smash. Appreciate everybody that has checked that out and supported Shane in his new solo venture show. It is great. It is a unique mix of dynasty strategy, but also some comedic nuance that makes Shane one of a kind. So check that out. Support the YouTube channel, Destination Devi on YouTube, along with the podcast feeds Wake Up with Ray G and the Destination Devi podcast feed that you are on right now. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. And then finally, a reminder, Dynasty Trades in 5 this week, March 12th, 8:30 Eastern Time. Be there live on YouTube. We will have JJ Zacharyson live on the show talking all things dynasty, dynasty trades, the rookie class, etc. It should be an awesome show to have JJ on. It's a big deal for Dynasty Trades in 5. So if you haven't already checked that out or liked the YouTube channel, please do so. And we live stream every Tuesday night at 8:30, along with the hammer streams that we're going to be doing regularly throughout the week. Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, Clay and I will be doing another hammer stream where we knock out a ton more dynasty trades. So check that out as well. And then finally, we are coming up on NFL free agency, and there's going to be a lot of information dropping over the next week or so. So stay tuned with Destination Devi for potentially some new announcements coming very soon. And I think I might have jinxed it with last week's episode. I did 6 bets that I want to make before NFL free agency, and 2 of them were Dalton Schultz and Mike Evans. And of course, right when the podcast released last week, both of those guys re-signed with their incumbent teams, Evans going back to Tampa Bay and Schultz going back to Houston. And I had mentioned Schultz as a player that I wanted to buy just because it was a very high likelihood that he was going to go back to Houston, either on the franchise tag or a deal like this that got done. So it immediately made him one of those guys that was more valuable on your team than his name cachet probably had. But now that he's back in Houston, that opportunity is gone. And Evans was interesting. I think my stance on Evans still remains the same. I'm still willing to bet against a receiver that has his profile, even though he has produced for a decade already. I'm still willing to bet against a receiver that is where he is in his career and just betting against it actually happening again. Now, if you want to make that bet for the 5th straight year and be wrong, then I can understand you not wanting to go with my advice. But I do think if you can move him for that price that I had mentioned, like 2 seconds, and get one of those picks being in this class, I'm still in favor of doing that. And that's just an update on 2 of the bets that I had made last week that have obviously changed since I recorded the show. And again, as I said at the beginning, we're coming up on free agency later today. If you're listening to this on Monday, 12 o'clock noon Eastern Standard Time, the legal tampering period opens. So there is going to be a frenzy. If you're listening to this after then, it has already started, a frenzy of news of players signing offer sheets, players being interested in going here, trades that can be announced unofficially. They cannot be official until Wednesday, March 13th at 4 o'clock PM. But there will be a period of 52 hours before then where you're basically getting all of this news. And it's just going to be an absolute madhouse of information, things changing left and right, players signing here, players getting traded there, rumors galore, because now teams can officially announce things that have been in the works. People in the media can start talking about things that have been discussed, because technically they're not allowed to be discussed before the Monday at noon deadline. But of course, we already know that they are. So it's just going to be a crazy week. And I think I want to be cautious, but again, just to leave the topic from last week as a consistent theme, you want to act right as information either breaks or it is fresh or you think something is going to take place. You want to get in early. You don't want to wait until the news breaks, obviously, but after something breaks, you also want to form your opinion quickly and start acting. Even if that does become the consensus a week later or even a couple days later, that's fine. You want to get in early. If you're going to go against the grain, if you're betting on something not being what everybody thinks, that's fine, but bet on it early. Don't wait for big voices out there, content creators, to start navigating through the waters of this news and then saying, okay, this is the conclusion that I would go with, because then it's going to be harder to do. So I would just challenge all Dynasty players to take the news, absorb it, read it, and go out there and just have some conviction or form a bet and make the bet and go with it. Don't wait. Don't wait for myself or Ray or someone else out there to go, this is probably what you should do. Because by time you've heard that, 1,000 other people have heard it. Other people in your league have heard it. When they get that offer from you or when you approach somebody with that idea, they're going to go, wait a second, I've already heard that. That's the side I want to be on. And if you're on the same side as somebody else or most people in your league, nothing's going to get done. It's going to be stagnant. I think that's a big thing that we started to talk about in the Discord, is trying to identify what the other side is looking for in a trade. Maybe not the players, maybe not the value. Those are things you have to sometimes work out. But what is appealing to them? Where their team is at? What type of trade is appealing to them? There are times where just a sheer number of volume of picks or volume of assets appeals to somebody. And then there are times where it's the opposite. Those are the things you want to read and at least start going in that direction. And I've talked about it on previous shows. Getting free information with the trade offer is huge. And a lot of times you're going to get a response. You're going to get the free information if you send out something that appeals to the type of deal they're looking for. Even if it's not the exact deal, if it's a deal where they need to cut three players to get under the roster spot limit to make their draft picks, they're probably not going to even listen or respond to a deal where you're giving them three more and getting back one. That's probably not going to be one that even resonates in their mind as, hey, I should consider this, or hey, I should even respond to this. It's just going to be a reject, walk away, and probably a sigh on their end, like, why are they sending me this offer? It doesn't help me in any way, shape, or form. So consider that before you send out offers. Maybe not exactly what's going to be accepted, but formulate a deal that may be visually appealing to the other manager in terms of what they're trying to do. And you might be shocked at the number of responses that you get. But we're going to move on with today's topic. And today's topic is just going to be a quick update to the rookie tiers. This is not going to be a terribly long episode, only because there's going to be so much information happening this week. I want to make this one a quick listen for everybody and just kind of get in and out on how I'm viewing the rookie tiers and the rookie class. I've talked about this on Destination Chill. We've covered this a little bit on my Mannequin Chill show that Shane and I just put out, where we updated and talked about some of the regrets that we had on our previous mock draft. But this isn't going to be exactly what you're thinking. I'm going to go through the players, but I want to really do just a high-level view of the tiers in the class. So I'm not going to go through every single player and be like this player over that player, or here's the order. It's just going to be a high level view of where the tier breaks are now, how I'm viewing these picks in clusters, how I'm viewing these picks kind of based on my roster construction and based on if I had to decide today, how I'm viewing the big picture tiers of the picks and just the general theme of the class, because it has changed a little bit. I think the value pockets are a little different, and I think the demand for some of these picks is a little higher and maybe even a little lower now that we've had the combine. So let's just go through it, and I'm going to use the roster construction series format, which, as everybody knows, if you've listened to the roster construction series, it's a 12-team start 11, 1.75 tight end premium, and 30-man rosters. So if you want to replicate it, create a sleeper league. You make it three receivers. You adjust to the number of flexes. So it's start 11, 30-man rosters, and then change the tight end premium to 0.75 extra for a catch. So 1.75 total. That is it. Don't change any of the other scoring. No bonuses. The quarterback scoring stays the same. You've mimicked the roster construction series. So that was what I'm going to use. And I'm going to talk about this through a lineup lens. I've done a best ball mock draft a couple weeks ago. We're going to talk lineup here. So this is going to be back to the traditional start 11 lineup league, where we're going to probably value the QBs and the running backs a little higher than we did in the best ball draft. And we're just going to go through the clusters. And what did these clusters or tiers mean for roster construction? Not so much the players. I'm not going to debate Xavier Worthy versus Brian Thomas versus A.D. Mitchell. I'm not really going to debate those in this show. I'm not even really going to debate the quarterback values or the top three receiver values. Like, that's not going to be this show. If you have nuances within those where you maybe want to separate those into tiers, that's totally fine. But for purposes of this, I'm trying just to capture big picture how people are viewing these tiers. So for me, here's what it looks like right now. You have a new tier at the top, which is a tier of eight. And you may say, wow, a tier of eight. That's a lot to put in the elite tier. And I'm not necessarily saying they're all in the elite tier, but I'm just talking about from a roster construction standpoint. If you are holding a top eight pick, you may have various needs. And I think the needs is what is going to drive the demand for some of these picks. Before, it might have been a tier of six. It might have been a tier of seven. But now it looks very evident that we are going to have four quarterbacks that get drafted very high. And now you may say, I don't like one of those quarterbacks. I really don't count that player in the tier. That's fine. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking big picture. If someone is looking at a need-based analysis or looking at a roster construction analysis with these picks, they're putting four quarterbacks inside the top eight picks. You're putting a tight end in there. In 1.75 premium, depending on how a tight end is valued, you're looking at a tight end for sure in that top eight. You can probably say tight end in any format, but for sure in a 1.75, a tight end is going in there. And then you have three receivers. And I think now that Rome Odunze had a good combine and he is moving up quickly in keep trade cut, wide receiver 17, and he's moving up. He's gone up a couple spots already in the last 30 days. My prediction is he will be inside the top 15, possibly the top 12 overall by the time we get closer to the NFL draft, as all reports are, is he's going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. In fact, may get drafted higher than Malik Nabers. So he has moved up to form a clear top eight tier. Now, to start with this top eight tier, four quarterbacks, three receivers, and a tight end, what is largely going to drive the demand inside this tier? If you are picking at 108, or if you are picking at 105, there's probably going to be something on your roster where you go, I need a quarterback. I would like another receiver. I'm okay taking a shot on an elite tight end. But I think inside that tier, if you just picture that you are a roster that is okay just taking best value, don't have a specific need, don't have to get a quarterback, don't really, really want to get a receiver because I already have four starting quarterbacks, you're pretty comfortable inside that top eight. So really where I think the moves are going to be happening are going to be the teams that really want a certain thing or don't want a certain thing. They are willing to move within that tier. I know if I have a roster where I already have, let's say, three quarterbacks, three good ones, and it's one of those leagues where, and we get questions like this on Trades in Five all the time. Hey, the quarterback market in my league just isn't there. I have three good quarterbacks. I can't trade them, but I also have the 104 and the 105. Is it crazy just to go wide receiver, and pass on the third quarterback, the fourth quarterback? And sometimes the answer is no, because the quarterback market has already spoken. The only changes there might be, can I trade back a couple spots and still get the same players? But for all intents and purposes, you're looking at those picks as, if I can address the needs and it's within my roster construction, I think you can treat all of those picks the same. And on the contrary, if you need a quarterback and you are sitting at 108, you may not get one at 108, but that's okay. I've resigned to the fact that if I need a quarterback, I don't need to necessarily trade a haul to move up one or two spots to draft a quarterback. I'm okay sitting at 108, and if it's Rome Odunze or Brock Bowers, I'm okay taking that, even if a quarterback might be a greater need. So I think that's pretty clear. A top eight tier of players, four quarterbacks, three receivers, and a tight end. That has changed. I think that has expanded a couple spots to where now people feel pretty comfortable about the four quarterbacks, and with three receivers being pretty strong in that range, and a clear tier break until you get to the next set of players. So we're going to move on, and I think this is going to be the intriguing portion of the show for most people, is what do I do from 109 all the way through probably the second round? And you may say, well, that's a giant tier. So I'm not going to keep a tier of 109 through 212. That's too wide. There's too many choices. There's too many nuances to that. But you have to separate that. And I think the biggest takeaway for me is these picks are starting to have a little more demand. But I'm also not seeing these picks move a lot, because I do think that there has been an interesting development with what you're going to be able to get within these picks, but also people starting to realize, hey, there's a lot of options in here, and I'm not sure exactly the way that it's going to go. We saw a bunch of running backs be impressive at the combine, to where I do think people are now looking at this class, and if you look at any of the mock drafts that DD has put out, a lot of people have released their top 24 rankings or their tiers. And you'll start to notice five or six running backs going in the second round. Maybe there's one that cracks the first. I think there's going to be options to where somebody or maybe multiple people do take a running back in the late first of a rookie draft. But for the most part, you're seeing like half a dozen running backs coming off the board in the second. And whether that's people feeling a little better about somebody like Jalen Wright, feeling great about Trey Benson, still okay taking Jonathan Brooks, feeling safe by drafting Blake Corum, and then maybe there's a couple others that have kind of jumped up, and people just feel like, hey, if that guy gets draft capital and they're in a spot where I'm okay with it, I'm fine taking Braylon Allen still. Maybe I have interest now in Marshawn Lloyd more than I did before. Will Shipley, Ray Davis. There's a ton of options. So I think people are resigned to the fact that there's going to be probably half a dozen running backs that potentially could come off the board in the second round. That wasn't the case before. Some people did that, but others were like, I'm not really sure about this RB class, so I'm just going to keep taking receivers. So we've started to see some receivers jump up. I mean, big winners from the combine, Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, bounce backs for Xavier Leggett, Devontae Walker. Like, some of these guys have kind of jumped back onto the radar. A.D. Mitchell was a huge winner. Xavier Worthy was a true huge winner, but they were already kind of in this tier already. And then a few others that might have fallen out, like Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin, they didn't fall out entirely to where they maybe fall down in the pecking order, but they didn't fall out of the second round. So I just listed more than half a dozen receivers, a half a dozen running backs. You're probably going to put Jatavion Sanders in there. And then one prediction that I've had is there's going to be two more quarterbacks, probably Penix and Nix, but it could be Rattler, where a team drafts them in the second round, maybe the third round, but it's clear after they get drafted, they were drafted to get a shot to start. Now, does that mean they are a long-term starter? No. But think about the appeal, especially if four quarterbacks go in the top eight of every draft, the appeal of a random Bo Nix that lands in Denver in the second round, and you're like, man, there's probably a path to where he starts. Whether you believe in him or not, there is a path to where he gets a Malik Willis shot. Remember Malik Willis, when he got a shot as a rookie, there was a window. Hell, there was a window for a damn near a whole season for Sam Howe. There was a window at one time, believe it or not, for Davis Mills. So if you think about it, lumping these types of quarterbacks into a price range where it's just another random second round pick, people will take them, especially if it's the name Michael Penix or if it's the name Bo Nix, because generally they were already on the radar. And if they get drafted to a spot where somebody goes, yep, we're going to give them a chance to start, because it's not going to be a landing spot that already has a starter. The capital is going to go along with the opportunity. So I don't think you see a situation where one of those guys gets drafted in the second round and it's to a team that already has a locked in starter. So you can tell yourself a story where there's going to be two QBs just by default in this 109 to 212 range. So if we look at that 16 pick cluster, and I've already mentioned half a dozen running backs, more than half a dozen receivers, two quarterbacks, and another tight end, at least with Jatavion Sanders in a 1.75 premium, boom, that's 16 players right there. So how do I break it up? Well, I'm looking at it as there's going to be running back options, right? They're going to be there. There's going to be wide receiver options, probably 8 to 10 of them. There's going to be a couple quarterback options. There's going to be a tight end option. So how is the market going to prefer these players from a tier perspective? And quite frankly, I can't really answer that for you right now. One thing that I'm going to hypothesize, which maybe is a hot take, I'm seeing a lot of data about, well, 6 or 7 receivers are going to go in the first round. I've said it myself. If 3 receivers go in the top 9, there is going to be some pressure on teams that know they want to leave this draft with a receiver in the first 2 days. Do I take that receiver in the first round? Do I take that receiver in the mid to late first? Or do I gamble and say, well, because there are so many options, I'm going to kind of dare everybody else to take their receiver and I'll take my receiver in the second, or maybe I'll even try to get my receiver in the third. So it will be very interesting. What I'm looking for most, and I know we're a ways off, but I'm going to be looking for most, is there a receiver that starts really separating themselves from the pack that is the clear wide receiver 4, meaning after Marv, after Neighbors, after Dunze, do we start hearing steam for another receiver that's just not going to get out of the top 20? And we may not know what landing spot, but we're looking at some of these spots like the Colts, and we're like, I don't know if the Colts are going to take a receiver in the first round. But is there a chance there is a player on the board where you go, they're just not getting out of the top 20? If that's the case, we have a very good chance to get the 6 receivers in the first round. Just because there's going to be the 4th one off the board higher than expected, which like last year, you saw kind of a run of receivers go. As soon as one went, the next team was like, man, we better get ours now because I'm not sure what we were going to get next time we're on the clock. So if you don't see that, we may have the top 3. And then we see that the NFL kind of views all the other receivers as they're good, but they're not worth using pick 20 on versus pick 52. Or vice versa. Like they're not worth actually taking in the first versus the second. So then what you see is you see a bunch of these needy teams outside of maybe the Chiefs or Buffalo. Outside of those, you see a bunch of the wide receiver needy teams come up in the second round. So then you have this cluster that starts at the late 20s and goes all the way through the second round. And you're like, how do I really tier those guys? We kind of talked about it on this week's Destination Chill as well. Like there's going to be some tough decisions where you have to be realistic on the range of outcomes for these guys. You can't just follow draft capital. A lot of it's going to be about the landing spot, the opportunity, but more so the perception of the receiver going in. There's so many options. There's so many flavors. The tiers are going to be all over the place. So I'm looking at this range of the 109 through the 212 as there's going to be a ton of flavors of receivers, depending on what you need, depending on if you're looking for an innings eater, if you're looking for somebody to flip, if you're looking for somebody with a ceiling, there's going to be a lot of options. Given the receiver market, here's where we're going to get into the tiers. Given the receiver market, I do think that at least 2 or 3 of those picks at the back half of the first round are going to be receivers. They are going to be the one that lands in Kansas City, the one that lands in Buffalo, the one that has a profile where people can squint and go, that guy's going to be an immediate top target earner. I know Ray talked about potentially somebody going to Baltimore, somebody going to Carolina. Now, the expectations probably are going to be too high, but the opportunity could be to where the community says, all right, I'm willing to buy in, especially if it is somebody like a Troy Franklin, where maybe his stock isn't super high, but he goes somewhere and you go, all right, I'm willing to buy back in. So I think there's going to be receivers that are taken in that tier. So I'm viewing that higher end tier as this is maybe the danger tier for me, but you're going to get your choice. Vice versa, if there is a quarterback that goes to a spot where you really are interested, maybe a team trades up and takes a quarterback in the late first. Maybe a team drafts a quarterback in the early second, and it's Penix, and you really like him in that landing spot. Like, there's some landing spots to where Penix goes to Denver, Nix goes to Minnesota, Atlanta. Now, I think that's unlikely that those teams just kind of wait, because it doesn't sound like that's what they want to do at quarterback. But if they do, the community will be able to tell themselves this guy should be a late first round pick. So I think those top four picks in the late first round, 109 through 112, hold a little higher weight simply for the choice. Now, could you get burned where the tier break is the 111 and you are holding the 111 in the 112 thinking you're going to be part of a higher tier because somebody gets their choice? And then at that point, the choices don't matter. Sure. But I'm viewing that as a tier, 109 through 112. And it's strictly because I think I'm going to have more flexibility. I value flexibility within this big tier. Meaning if there is a clear-cut RB1 that goes to a smash spot, boom, I can maybe take them there at 109, 110, 111, 112. If there's a quarterback that lands in a spot where they're going to be an immediate contributor, they may go off the board there just because there's not any other options. And there's going to be a couple receivers that get the honeypot landing spots where people say, I need to get A.D. Mitchell in Kansas City, or I need Brian Thomas in Buffalo, or Xavier Worthy in this spot. Like the name attached to the landing spot. So there is going to be three or four players that are a tier above from a perception standpoint, from an ADV standpoint, meaning people are going to like them probably more than the production expectations should be. And it might be somebody that people don't love, Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey. When I mean don't love, didn't have them on the radar before the Senior Bowl or before the Combine. But they get that honeypot landing spot. And people go, I have to move them up just because of the landing spot. So I still value those picks. But I'll say this. I do think if those picks are treated that way as a different tier in terms of, man, I'm okay taking that 110, 111 now because of the combine, but I'm not so sure about the 206. Those are the picks you want to try to move. I had said, basically, I'm trying to be more aggressive on moving those picks for future capital, trying to capitalize on this. If I can move the 111 for a future first, I'll get greedy and ask for a future second. And if I'm able to vet the team out and say that is a strong bet to be a better first next year, I'm probably willing to do it straight up. And that is simply just a timing thing. That deal is more likely to go down now or over the next month or so than it will at any other point. If you wait till you're on the clock, human psychology is going to say you're going to be more tempted to make that pick if it's obvious to everybody in the league that that pick should be made. And what I mean is if Brian Thomas goes to Buffalo or Trey Benson goes to Dallas or Xavier Worthy to KC or Michael Penix to Atlanta, any of those landing spots, if you're on the clock at the 110 and you're sitting there thinking, man, I could trade this pick for a random 25 first. Two people in my league have offered that. You're going to be more tempted to go, man, two people have offered me that. It's hard for me not to make the pick. So our own biases are going to start selling ourselves on the pick, which is the same reason people are offering you the 25 first for the pick, which is traditionally a plus EV move for the team that's trading away the 111 or the 110 for a future first. That's almost always a great bet when you're sitting at this point in the draft. But if you're waiting till right before the draft or when you're on the clock, the human mind is going to go, wait a second, you know, this might actually be worth more. And the reality is it's not. You want to make that bet before you have that information. You don't want to be tempted by the information. I would much rather make the bet now and just kind of hope that it lands in a way where I was on the right side of the bet. And the worst case scenario, if it doesn't, I still made traditionally the plus EV bet by making the future pick or turning the 111, 110 or whatever into a future first. So I want to make that decision sooner rather than later, but I do think that's a good bet to make. And get greedy. Try over the next month or so to get a first and a second. Try to give back. Maybe you give back a third, get back a second. Get a little bit of a sweetener. Get back an extra running back. Get back an extra quarterback. You know, try to upgrade somewhere where it's a small upgrade, probably a second, maybe a third round piece coming back your way on top of the first. But I think that's a smart move to make. But there's going to be demand for those picks simply because of the choice. The next tier break after the 109 through 112, I'm going to view as the 201 through the 208. This is where you're going to be able to get some innings eaters, whether those are a quarterback, some running backs, definitely some running backs are going to go in here. And there's going to be some innings eaters receivers that go in here. Guys that maybe they don't have a ton of a ceiling. We mentioned the names on the podcast the other night. Jaden Reed is probably a high-end example that people are now saying, ah, if I have Jaden Reed or Jordan Addison, like, let me re-roll. Like, legitimately, you're hearing people say, re-roll Jordan Addison for the 110. Re-roll Jaden Reed for the 110, 111, 112. And the reality is, like, those are going to be the types of receivers that if you hit, you're going to end up getting from the 201 to the 208. You're going to probably have four or five receivers that go in that range, and they're going to be all over the map. But then if I said you're going to get 70 catches for 750 yards from one of those receivers, you'd probably be like, yeah, that's kind of a successful rookie year. That's usable. That's semi-usable even in a lineup in a start 11. Definitely in a best ball, that's usable. But that was Josh Downs last year. That was the example we talked about on Destination Chill. That was Josh Downs. And if you click on a start 11 lineup league and you see Josh Downs, you're probably like, I don't know. I'm not super excited about that. And the reality is that's going to be a decent amount of receivers in this class, in this range. So there's going to be some innings eaters here. But I think this is the range where if you've kind of resigned to the fact that, hey, I'm okay just drafting one or two of those guys. I'm okay drafting a running back or two in here because it fits my roster construction. I'm okay drafting the QB six because he was a second round pick. That's fine. This is the range where I think you can trade back to if you wanted to move a 110 for two of these picks. That's fine, especially if you were viewing that 110 as, okay, I'm just going to take a shot on whoever the wide receiver five is in the class. Okay, then why not take the wide receiver 8 and the wide receiver 10 for the wide receiver 5? The only difference is the wide receiver 5, like I just talked about, is probably going to have a little more demand, whoever that is. And if it's the quarterback 5 or if it's the running back 1, all of those are going to have a little more demand simply because people are going to move the preferred options up. But the capital, the profile, the pedigree, I don't think a lot of that is going to change within this big tier. So I view this 201 through 208 as kind of the innings eaters tier, where I know I need some players. I know I want to get a running back and a receiver in here, but it's more of a wild card pick, a pick where I know I'm going to have choices, maybe even choices of three different positions, but I'm not going to be able to control my board. And I'm probably not going to be able to move these picks that frequently. That is going to be my guess. A pick that has a two in front of it. So the 201 through the 208, these are going to be a very tough range of picks to trade because you're not getting a first. I mean, it would be awesome if we ended up with more than 12 players that by time we got to draft time, people went, okay, the 108 is the tier break, but there's still four or more players that are worth trading a future first. And that's why I talked about on a previous show, this might be the range where on Dynasty Portfolio Weekly, I said this is a target range where if this starts to become the consensus, skip 2025. These are the picks where I'm trying to move for maybe a 26 first. 202 for a 26 first. Think about how plus EV that move is. I know you have to wait a year. But other than that, what does a trade for the 202 look like? Probably it's a trade up to get a 110, 111, or it is a trade back where somebody tries to get, you know, the 205 and a third. But it's really going to be very specific to the players and the needs of the managers. This is not going to be a range, and it's historically, this is true as well, because it starts the second and it has a two in front of it, but the people that carry these picks generally have high values on them because to them, there is still quote unquote first round players potentially on the board. You're probably just not moving those 201 through 208 picks very frequently, unless it is somebody that is also in that range, willing to move around the board or willing to pay a little extra for a player they want. There's not a lot of just value-based deals. You're not moving the 201 for a player that you think you would rather take over a first-rounder veteran-wise. Like, you may go, okay, there's this receiver I like, George Pickens. He's worth a late first. But sending the 202 for him isn't getting it done. You're going to have to send something extra. So unless you find one of those deals where you and the other manager just meet in a value range, these are the picks that are historically just tough to move. Because you're going to value them higher, or the people that have them are going to value them higher because of the pedigree and the players on the board, but they're all pretty flat. They're all just innings eaters. People see, okay, I like Roman Wilson, but I'll take him if I have the pick, and I'll probably just take him in the other league where I have the 204. But I'm not giving you much to go get the 204 in this league where I don't already have the pick. So this is an innings eaters tier, 201 through 208, where basically these picks are going to be gridlocked. So if you can move them for a 26 first, just straight up spam. Don't even care whose team it is. We're talking 2 years out. Teams can change a lot between now and then, but the power of holding a first is so much better than holding one of these picks. If you can get that done, even if you have to add a third or something like that, or a player, do it. It's a great, great move if you can pull it off. And I think you probably have to do it now while people are starting to view these picks as a little flatter in this big cluster. So after the 208, 209 through 212, this is going to be the kind of I've accepted my fate tier, where I think there is going to be a number of players that got good pedigree or had good profiles or both. And I think there's a chance that there's a running back or two and there's a receiver or two here. So I think you're going to get your choice of receiver or running back here. And I think these are going to be maybe the best values of the draft because they're going to be the lowest common denominator. This is where I'm thinking there's going to be players like Xavier Leggett, Tez Walker, the RB5. Maybe that ends up being Braylon Allen. Pick your poison. But these are going to be seen as like kind of the lower end of the tier, but they're all going to get similar capital to guys that literally went a round higher. Like, you may see legit round two receivers in this range, but maybe it's someone that didn't get the greatest landing spot and you were had a little shaky on their profile, or there's a running back that goes to a spot where it's not just a smash opportunity day one, but you're looking at it and going, man, that running back got drafted in the third round. I'm not sure that's much different than the running back that someone else took at the 111, and I'm getting this guy at the 211. So I think this is going to be the lowest common denominator. If you want to take a tier down from one of those 202, 203, 204 picks, and you could get two picks in this range, I'd be fine with that. If you've accepted that you're already going to make the pick and you haven't been able to trade that 203 for a 26 first, then fine. This is kind of like the acceptance. I'll just stick and pick lowest common denominator value range, 209 through 212. You're going to get the best of the rest, but they're not going to be dart throw picks, if that makes sense. You're not going to be reaching on ADV. You're not going to be reaching on just sheer, I liked the profile, but they didn't get the capital. Or sheer, they got the capital, but I have no clue who the player is. We see that every once in a while, too, where a guy will pop up in the second round, and you go, man, Tyquan Thornton, I really probably shouldn't draft him at all. But he got drafted in a range where the NFL drafted him higher than I thought. So, well, I'll just take him at the end of the second or the early third because, well, he got draft capital. But we know that's historically not a good thing either if a player literally pops up on the radar out of nowhere and you just take him based on that. Brenton Strange was an example last year where a lot of people in 1.75 or 2 PPR took Brenton Strange, well, because he got second round capital. Then you go, well, what's the plan with drafting a tight end like that? where he's already blocked by a top eight tight end in the NFL who they just signed to a long-term deal. There's no path. But you saw it. Hey, it was a second-round pick. I'm going to buy in. I'm going to take him probably a round or two higher than I ever would have considered taking another tight end outside of what I had in the elite draftable tier. I'll just take him because, well, NFL draft capital. So you're going to see picks like that, and that's where we move into the final tier. And I'm going to call this the pure roster construction padding tier. And this is going to be probably from 301 to 406. And yes, I'm having a wider range of picks here where these are going to be where you're going to fill in with the any running backs on a 53. You're going to fill in with any quarterback on a two deep. And yes, there are some quarterbacks that I would draft. Contrary to what others will say, I am willing to draft some Michael Pratt, some Joe Milton, some Jordan Travis, maybe some Devin Leary. You know, whoever the quarterbacks are, Spencer Rattler probably will fall in this range if he doesn't get second round capital. There's going to be some quarterbacks where I go, they have an inside shot at a backup job at minimum. Now, whether you play that way or not, that's fine. But included in this range of picks, 301 to 406, and yes, it's wide because I think these picks are going to be transacted a lot in leagues where people are just chasing a name and they're chasing something for their roster construction. I need more running backs, so let me take some shots. I'd like to take some backup quarterbacks, so let me take some shots. For me, the biggest driver of these picks, because I look at my profile, I don't talk a lot about my portfolio specifically on this show, but I look at my ranges of picks because I track all of my picks between the 302 and the 308. And it probably honestly goes all the way down to the 402. So 302 to 402. I mean, I'm sitting on a bevy of picks. 5 at 302, 5 at 303, 5 at 304, 7 at 305, 7 at 306, 4 at 307, 8 at 308, 5 at 309, 5 at 310, 6 at 311, 5 at 312, and then another from 401 to 403, another 16 picks. So I have a ton of picks personally in this range. And these are ones where you need to be selective on who you take. And I'll walk through that process here real briefly before we end the show. But also understanding these are going to be simply roster construction fillers or roster construction padding picks. So let's walk through the analysis of how to use these picks. One, these picks can be used first and foremost to move for future flexibility. And what I mean by that is two things. One, ADV. There's a player that didn't go in the first two rounds, but they have a big name. Bucky Irving slips. Okay, Bucky Irving's a player where one highlight people will buy in. There's a receiver with some pedigree that falls. Oh man, I actually don't mind taking somebody like Keon Coleman if he fell. I'm not saying Keon Coleman's going to fall, but you never know. Whatever name it is that falls, this running back fell because they didn't go to a great landing spot. Fourth round pick, but went to a poor landing spot. Falls to the third round. Malachi Corley did nothing at the combine. He's a receiver that could kind of just get lost, but he's an early third round pick. He's a very niche type of receiver. He falls to the third. So really looking for players that you're just saying, okay, I got him at the 304. Is there a world where after a preseason game or a highlight or some buzz, I can flip him for a second? Pure ADV, pure just preying on other people's biases on the name. You know, this is not the range where you draft the player and you go, nobody likes that guy, but I don't mind his landing spot. That's fine. I don't want to spend the 304 on that type of player, because I only have one out. I want to focus these picks first and foremost on trying to turn them into more flexible future value, which means one, drafting ADV purely on the name. Purely drafting the name because other people like the name. The second thing would be using these picks for future flexibility. Somebody else wants to come up and draft a player. Okay. If you really want to get the wide receiver 17, in the mid third round, because you're chasing that next Puka or that Tank Dell, That's fine. I'm willing to move the pick because I think one of the things that people say when you refer to they're chasing the next Puka or the next Tank Dell isn't that we're actually expecting the next Tank Dell or the next Puka. What people are chasing, or more likely what they're doing, is they're more willing to make picks here a little bit outside of their normal ranges, right? Like, I'm willing to squint and look at Luke McCaffrey, who gets drafted in the fourth round, and go, you know what? I might draft him now. Whereas in years past, if you were following some template of I'm only drafting like first and second round receivers or receivers with this profile, Luke McCaffrey is not on your board. It doesn't matter where he lands. You're going, that's probably a roster clogger. But here, people may be more willing to make those picks. So does that create more demand with these picks? I don't know if it does right now. Nobody is clamoring to go trade for your 308. But on the clock, there may be more likelihood that people are willing to make picks like that, and especially if they're willing to kind of forgive the profiles and draft capital for receivers, there may be more people willing to make picks or give you something for these picks. So I want to either draft ADV or I want to turn it into future capital. Listen, I mean, one of the best moves to make, especially if you are in an active deeper league, which we're doing a start 11 here, if you're in an active league, is even if it's the 309, the 308, the 307, what is the shame in kicking that pick to the future? You may say, ah, man, I can't really trade the 308 for a future third. Come on, I'm losing value there. But are you? All you're doing is picking something that fills your roster construction. You're about to draft Joe Milton. Great. He's a high-end backup quarterback potentially, but he's just supplementing your roster construction. That's it. He's not giving you any war. You don't envision that he's going to be in your lineup. You're just going, hey, I'm going to hoard the backup QBs, which is fine. Or I'm drafting any running back on a 53. Cool. I'm drafting Cody Schrader here. He's a fifth-round pick, but I like his landing spot. Sure, I'll take him here. But you're just roster constructing with that pick. Wouldn't it be better to go, you know what? Sure, I took a little bit of a value hit because you got to pick who you wanted, and all I charged you was a future third. But guess what you got? A future third in an active league, a pick you can send for a spot start running back. You might get one start from that spot start running back. That might be more than Cody Schrader ever gives you. When we put out the draft pick war, you'll be able to see that, hey, any draft pick under a certain range, and I'll tell you, it goes to zero and below zero well before the 308, is probably better spent buying some sort of potential war during the season. So these are going to be picks where I already just named off how many picks I have in this range. I better not catch myself making more than half those picks. They should be ADV picks. They should be picks where I go, I can probably sell this player or tell myself a story on this player. But I better not end up with 12 shares of Cody Schrader, 7 shares of Will Shipley. Man, I just had to take Malachi Corley every time he fell to the 308. Javon Baker, every time he got to the fourth, I'm just taking him. Like, I better not end up in that situation. Otherwise, I just blew a ton of picks. We love making these picks way too much compared to what the expected war is. So think about that. Think about this range of picks. I called it the 301 to the 406 as just roster construction patterns, but also trying to kick that value to the future. Whereas right now, it basically has the value of a roster spot. It doesn't have any future value yet. So if you can turn it into future value or more future value than currently sits on the clock, go for it. Then the final tier, I'll just end it with this, 407 through basically all the players on waivers. Those are pure roster spot fillers. I'm okay moving those picks. There may be some ADV that survives into there. But for me, I'm probably going to be stuck with a lot of these picks. Stuck with a lot of the waiver picks. And this year, those are going to be almost solely focused on running backs and quarterbacks. That's where I'm going to pick up Jordan Travis. That's where I'm going to pick up Michael Pratt. That's where I'm going to pick up Devin Leary. I'm going to pick up the running backs that went in the seventh round or UDFAs. They are truly just roster spot fillers. So if you have to use these picks to maybe move up, maybe you add the 408 to the 308 to go to the 306 to pick a player that you think has really good ADV. Like, I'm totally fine doing that because the difference between those picks and the waiver pickups is nothing. And you actually don't want to commit to a draft pick if you can move it for future value because it actually hinders you from taking a shot on waivers. There's guys that I miss out on waivers every year because guess what I did? I made too many draft picks in the third and fourth. then I look at my rosters and I go, damn, I'm loaded with players. My taxi is already full. I'm in some leagues where it's 30-man rosters and 15-man taxi. Like, my taxi's full by the time we get to the end of the draft. And that's not good, because now I can't pick players up off waivers. I'm going, man, I can't bid on this running back, even though it's the same as the running back I drafted at the 409. But because I drafted one at the 409, I'm out on the waivers in that league. Whereas instead, would it have been better if I would have just moved that 409 plus something else to get something slightly better, but it consolidated, and now I can pick up somebody off waivers that was the same as the 409. So these are the picks you need to make sure you manage your numbers. You got to go through your roster spots, your roster rules, and figure out, do I have the capacity? Because you do not want to make picks here that ruin your chances or your likelihood of overturning some of those roster spots when it comes to the waiver claims. And it comes to the natural just graduation of player names from May all the way to the start of training camp, because they're going to turn over. There's going to be new names that pop up that you didn't hear about during the draft. And you go, okay, that's an intriguing player. He should probably be rostered. Let me start picking him up. But you need to have the space. You need to have the flexible space. 30-man rosters, you probably don't want to get over 28 by the time you get to waiver runs. You want to have two flexible spots between May and August to turn over. And people are just unlikely to cut a guy they just drafted. They drafted a guy at the 408. You're probably not cutting him. Very unlikely. So don't put yourself in that situation to begin with. So that's it. That's going through the tiers. That's how I would play it today. I'd like to get some feedback on if people are actually experiencing some of these tiers and the behaviors from other managers in their league. I've seen some people say that the combine and kind of the expectations of these picks now has killed activity in their leagues, because people are in on this class or they're not. And now it's hard to be in on the 109 through 212, because the people that have those picks are going, hell yeah, big winners after the combine. I'm getting a good player. And the people that don't have those picks are going, good luck. You're getting some Josh Downs. You know, that's what's going to be drafted in this range. You might be getting, I don't know, Tank Bigsby, Zach Charbonnet. Like, you're getting players like that where they're not worth anything right now. There's no demand for those players. So the people without the picks are going, there's really no reason I should be demanding these early to mid second round picks right now. You already have them. You're overvaluing them. You can go ahead and mix the picks. So maybe we're seeing some stagnancy because of that, but give me some feedback. Let me know. As always, check out everything at Destination Devi, destinationdevi.com. Check out the Trinity Tracker, the War Tool. Join the Discord, patreon.com/allgas, or the Destination 5 tier on the website if you want access to the bonus content there. And then check out the stream with JJ Zacharyson Tuesday night, March 12th, 8:30 Eastern time. Be there. Really looking forward to that. He's one of the legends of the industry. One of the reasons that I started making content, but also one of the people that I followed before I even became a content creator. So it'll be awesome to have him on Trades in 5. And then stay tuned for more content coming from the DD crew. And as a reminder, Destination Chill is now twice a week, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. And then Sunday nights, the cadence is going to be 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, most likely on Sunday nights throughout the offseason. So Wednesday and Sunday for Destination Chill. Laid back, come and chill with Ray and I. Just talk football, talk dynasty strategy, talk anything that's on your mind. That's going to be the show you want to show up to if you want to really interact. Trades in 5, it's usually pretty tight. It's hard to take a bunch of crowd questions that pop up spontaneously, but that's what Destination Chill is. So check that out and look forward to seeing everybody in the live streams. Good luck. Enjoy this week of NFL news. It is going to be absolutely crazy and question a lot of what we know. And I'll be back next week. Peace out. Counsels grow.